So for exhortation this morning, Brother Mark has alluded to, I thought we'd pick up some themes from the principles of the seventh year and the year of Jubilee based on our reading in Leviticus 25. In some ways, the structure of Leviticus 25 makes it a bit of a challenge to make it to work out what applies to what as we move between the seventh year and the 50th year. But that just requires a bit of close reading. And so this group of chapters from Leviticus appears to be fleshing out some of the Ten Commandments. Chapter 24 expands on the taking of the name of God in vain. And chapter 26 starts with idolatry. And then this chapter 24 extends the laws of the Sabbath. But this time, for the seventh year rather than the seventh day. And as with the Sabbath day, this seventh year was designed to teach the Israelites to depend on God and that it wasn't only themselves that need a rest. The constant depletion of the land for cultivating crops was the problem that God protected against by ensuring that one year in seven they left the land to itself, so that it could recover and all that it produced could return to itself. And that's what we read for in 1 to 7 of Leviticus 25. And then we get a bit of a gap, and it resumes again in verse 18. Wherefore ye shall do my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and ye shall dwell in the land in safety. And what that was showing them was that they had to trust in God in order for this Sabbath year to work. In the same way that the manna would last 2 days when it was collected on the day prior to the Sabbath, the promise of God said that the land would produce three times the normal amount in the sixth year to allow them to get through the Sabbath year and on to the year following. So with these principles, God is showing that they need to work in order for the land to produce, but also reminding them not to overwork. They had to leave time for God. It was also there to remind them that the land was given to them by God, and that they were to look after it on His terms. And the year of Jubilee is also a reminder of this. In the 50th year, as we read in verse 9, a different type of event starts on the Day of Atonement. Instead of preparing the earth for the year's production, they would have a second year in a row of not cultivating the land. It was a year of remembering that the land was God-given and they had no ownership of it themselves. If they had bought or sold in the previous 49 years, they were to return the land back to the God-ordained owner to ensure that all families had the mechanism to survive. This mechanism would also enforce a price-setting mechanism when buying and selling. If the land was to be owned for the next 40 years, then the price would reflect that. But if the land was only to change hands for another 5 years, then the price was to reflect that also. Verse 16, according to the multitude of years, thou shalt increase the price thereof, and according to the fewness of years, thou shalt diminish the price of it. For according to the number of years of the fruit doth he sell it unto thee. What that tells us is that it is not the land that they are selling, but rather the output of the land, which would be cultivated by the buyer. Verse 23 is the reminder that it is God's land. The land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, for ye are strangers and sojourners with me. Yes, it was the land that was promised to Abraham and to his seed forever, but they were not yet to inherit it. They were, as Abraham, strangers and sojourners in the same land, as we read in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should afterward receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. The state of Abraham's dwelling here in Hebrews 11 is quite explicit. But as we go down the chapter, we see the same is true of all those mentioned in the passage. It doesn't just stop with those who are on the edge of the land. Verse 29 of Hebrews 11. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians are saying to do, were drowned. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. It talks also of those who were in the land. Verse 32. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, of Barak, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David and Samuel and of the prophets. It tells us that these all had not received the promise. Verse 39. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. This Sabbath of Sabbaths was to remind them of this, and is presumably time such that most would experience it twice in their lives. The year of Jubilee would not only remind them of their temporary status in the land, it would also remind them how they should be treating each other, especially the poor. Verses 25, 35, 39 and 47, all being sections on how they were supposed to respond to the poor amongst them in the year of Jubilee. These should already have been provided for between the years of Jubilee, as back in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 9. And when ye reap, the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and stranger. I am the Lord your God. This, of course, was how the courtship of Ruth and Boaz starts, as Ruth tails the reapers around Boaz's field, picking up the missed ears. The redemption in the book of Ruth is different to that under the year of Jubilee, but would appear to be related in terms of the idea that a near relation should be the one to redeem the situation. In chapter 25, it is the redemption of either land or servitude that is talked about. Verse 25. If thy brother be waxen poor and have sold away some of his possession, and if any of his kin come to redeem it, then shall he redeem that which his brother sold. And then verse 47. If a sojourner or stranger wax rich by thee, and thy brother that dwelleth by him wax poor, and sell himself unto the stranger or sojourner by thee, or to the stock of the stranger's family, after that he is sold, he may be redeemed again. One of his brethren may redeem him. Either his uncle or his uncle's son may redeem him, or any that is nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him, or, if he be able, he may redeem himself. An Israelite could end up selling themselves into slavery if they fell on hard times, But there is this, the provision for their family to redeem them from it. Generally speaking, the Israelites could not be made slaves again. This is the only situation in which it was permitted. Making slaves of Israelites was forbidden because they had been freed from bondage in Egypt and they now belong to God. Verse 55. For unto me the children of Israel are servants, and they are my servants whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So this chapter and its practice should remind the Israelites that they are God's people, redeemed from Egypt, and that they were staying in a land that had been promised to them, but without it being theirs. So what does this chapter say to us, apart from our generally far too intensive farming methods? The parallels are certainly there in terms of the spirit of the law, if not with the physical elements of it. I don't think there is anything that we are required to do every 50 years, only the equivalent of the original Sabbath in this, the weekly remembrance feast. The first parallel that we find is in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 14. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. That is, of course, not to say that we are supposed to disregard the things of this life, however. Paul tells us in Romans to ensure that we follow the rules of this world. Romans chapter 13, verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whoever therefore resisteth the power of God resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou not then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. He further exhorts us in Philippians about the life that we should lead in this present world. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 14. Do all things without murmuring and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither laboured in vain. Unlike the Israelites, we're not in a place of our own. Even though we may have a few oases like this, we have to coexist with others. At the point at which Leviticus 25 was written, it was to be expected that Israel were going to remove everybody else from the land. But they didn't manage that either and had to coexist with others. And there are plenty of warnings from that. The second parallel we get is closely related. It's Colossians chapter 3, verse 1. Since ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. Having been redeemed in Christ, we have the option of being freed from the shackles of sin and death. In accepting this redemption, our existence is no longer our own, rather one of service to our Redeemer. Romans chapter 8 and verse 11. But if the spirit of him that raised up Jesus from the dead dwell in you, he that raised up Christ from the dead shall also quicken your mortal bodies by his spirit that dwelleth in you. Therefore, brethren, we are debtors,
and not to the flesh, to live after the flesh. For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that ye suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. It's relatively easy to read Leviticus 25 and in some way not notice that it's a time of joy and a cause of celebration. It's another chapter in Leviticus that is just a set of rules and is somewhat dry. These rules, however, would bring great joy to people as they were finally able to return home and get their lives back. I've got a cross-reference from the blowing of the trumpet that was to declare the Jubilee to Psalm 89 and verse 15. Blessed is the people that know the joyful sound. They shall walk, O Lord, in the light of thy countenance. In thy name shall they rejoice all the day, and in thy righteousness shall they be exalted. For thou art the glory of their strength, and in thy favour our horn shall be exalted. For the Lord is our defence, and the Holy One of Israel is our King. We too are able to parallel the joy that this celebration of the year of Jubilee would bring. The joy that is to come is beyond our comprehension, but we can comprehend the joy we experience in knowing the hope that we have. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again, unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honour and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom, having not seen, ye loved, in whom, though now ye see him not, yet believing ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls.